Today's episode is brought to you by Omio. Omio is a travel booking platform that makes planning a vacation in Europe and North America effortless. Just enter your travel details and Omio will magically give you all the train, bus, flight, and ferry options for your journey. It's never been simpler to book your first real vacation for 2021. Best of all, using Omio saves you time and money, which is a win-win. Omio wants to help you leave your house this summer by offering 5% off your next booking. Just head on over to Omio.com and use promo code LISTENER5 at checkout. Valid until June 30th for all new users on all modes of transportation. It's just the pick-me-up your 2021 needs. Omio. Plan, book, and love the journey. Terms and conditions apply. Have you been in quarantine? Are you ready to enter the wild again? There's a chance no one has seen your coconuts in months. Don't ruin your first post-quarantine date with hairy coconuts. Would you show up to the first day of school without a haircut? Nope. Manscaped is here to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. The Lawnmower 3.0 is the best hygiene tool for the modern man. Because of the ceramic blade and advanced skin-safe technology, your snags will be reduced while preparing yourself for post-quarantine life. Manscaped is forever changing the grooming game with their Perfect Package 3.0 Essential Kit. The Perfect Package 3.0 comes with new and improved Lawnmower 3.0, waterproof cordless body trimmer, performance boxer briefs, and a travel bag for you to use when you're done quarantining. The Perfect Package 3.0 also comes with Manscaped Crop Preserver Deodorant and Crop Reviver Toner. The Crop Preserver is anti-chafing deodorant, which ensures your afternoon stroll through the jungle doesn't result in sticky coconuts. The Crop Reviver is a spray-on toner and made with soothing aloe and witch hazel extracts to give your coconuts a special boost. Subscribers to the Peak Hygiene Plan get a new replacement blade refill for your Lawnmower 3.0 delivered to your door every 3 months, making sure your trimmer stays fresh and clean. The light is at the end of the tunnel, fellas. Treat yourself for making it through the quarantine and welcome back to the jungle with a Perfect Package 3.0. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code SLOPDROP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com when you use SLOPDROP, S-L-O-P-D-R-O-P. Your first post-quarantine date will thank you.
That's a slop drop. I can answer that. That's a slop drop. What is that move? That's a slop drop.
Slop drop time.
Oh, that's a slop drop.
Slop drop, slop drop.
Slop drop. The slop drop indeed.
Welcome back to the slop drop. This is Nathan Rogers, and I'm joined by my tag partners for this evening, the unluckiest man on planet Earth, Bad Luck Chapman, and the manager of champions, Mr. Stephen E. What's going on, guys?
How are you?
What's going on, Tubo?
Doing good, man. Got a little guest this evening. Reason for that being tonight is Wednesday night, June 23rd, 2021. 25 years ago tonight from the WWF King of the Ring 1996, Austin 316 was born.
Had I realized that, I would have my Stone Cold IPA out in front of me right now, and I didn't realize that was a thing. Woo,
man! As far as historic promos, where does that one land?
Gosh. Gotta be top 2, top 3, you know, of all time. Like maybe, you know, it's hard to say, you know, yeah, that's the number one promo of all time, but by God, that might be the number one promo of all time.
It's definitely a game changer. No doubt about it. A career changer for Mr. Austin, for sure.
Yeah.
You talk about your Psalms, you talk about your John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says, I just whipped your ass.
25 years ago, man.
You know, it's hard to look at this promo and not reflect on Doc Hendricks there. You know,
Doc Hendricks.
he was something else, boy. But
you got to remember, he beat Jake Roberts too. So
yeah,
you know, there's a lot of legacy right there. Well, in those three names
beat Jake Roberts, but you know, like he he split his lip real bad in that that tournament, and
yeah,
you know, had to go to the hospital or went to the back and got, you know what, 15, 16 stitches
stitched up. Yeah.
Yeah, stitched up and went back to work, you know.
This is back when King of the Ring was King of the Ring too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Man, I miss King of the Ring. That was one of my favorite pay-per-views.
Well, now it's just a it's a Monday Night Raw, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know, they basically sum it up and do all the brackets on a Monday Night Raw and maybe have the finale at a pay-per-view or something.
On the topic of Stone Cold, CM Punk did a Twitter Q&A with his followers, and somebody asked him what it would take for him to appear on Broken Skull Sessions. And his response was pretty simple. He said money. And then he mentioned that, you know, nobody gets paid royalties for their stuff on Peacock. What do you guys think about that? Do you think he's got a point, or do you think he doesn't have a leg to stand on?
You know, like this might be an unpopular opinion, but my opinion on it is, you know, you were paid to do the stuff, and you got paid very well in his case. You know, Vince turned around and Vince owns the footage. You know, I don't know if he's got a leg to stand on, guy. I'm never going to be in that position to where I'm asking for, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, for appearances or anything like that over the years. But you know, the person was compensated when they got their check that year or their salary or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it sucks. Yeah. But I don't know if, I don't know if he has a leg to stand on. What do you think?
I disagree, man. I think that they should all still be making royalties. I think they should, you know, should still be, you know, Scott Hall got on one of the social media sites. I want to say it was probably last week or week before, you know, and he's like, man, I still make six figures, you know, just off NWO merch. Mm-hmm. You know, that takes care of those guys in the long run.
Yeah.
You know, and I think they should still get royalties. Because if I remember correctly, they were all complaining that the royalties were like nothing that they were getting. So, I mean, let them have what little bit you know that they're getting.
Yeah.
I kind of lean towards Steven. I mean, I'm sure it's in the contract when they sign the name on the dotted line. And they do get royalties for merch. And they do – I mean, there comes a point – and I know creative sucks, especially right now. But there's a time where it's going to be up to you to get yourself over in some certain situations. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, we just talked about Austin 316, one of the most plain generic T-shirts there is,
mm-hmm.
probably the most highest selling there ever has been.
Yeah, change the face of the casual wrestling fan. You know, I can remember I worked at a place called OnQ, and it was kind of a media store. You know, sold CDs, DVDs, and stuff like that back in the 90s, and of course being a wrestling fan. You know, I started to take notice when you know, our wall of T-shirts, we, you know, got an Austin 316 shirt. You know, we literally couldn't keep them in stock. And you know, the thing to me was those were the first, like, that was the first type of merchandise that you could buy outside of the event, you know, like, but, you know, outside or maybe through the catalog, which I didn't, you know, I never had bought anything from a catalog. You know, but that really changed the face of like apparel, that one, you know, that one phrase, that Austin 316. And man, I mean, like within probably 6 months or a year after that, I'd say within 6 months, you know, 50% of our t-shirt business was, you know, WWDX and, you know, just different people, but it really, you know, really, really made them made somebody take notice that, wow, we could sell a bunch of T-shirts to a bunch of people.
It was the greatest promo I ever wrote and gave to him, Steve. Glad he used it.
Kind of off the topic or off in left field here. Tomorrow, actually yesterday, would have been John Tenta's 58th birthday. Mm. And 58, that's young.
Yeah.
How long has he been...
Yeah. It's
12, 15 years maybe.
Been a while, but I just I remember as a kid watching, you know, he had some great feuds with Hogan.
Hulk Hogan. Yeah.
Other people, and God, he looked 58 years old then.
He's only in his 20s.
Man, they had a guy. It was his tag partner, Typhoon.
Typhoon, yeah.
He went on, and I was reading actually probably 6 months ago or so.
It's Cody Rhodes' uncle.
And he was saying that, you know, all these places, kind of like what we did with the, you know, the toughest ranked, you know, guys in professional wrestling. And he even said, you know, nobody includes John Tenta, but, you know, John Tenta was a legit undefeated sumo wrestler.
Yep,
like,
yeah, sure was.
He's like, man, he said that guy had more strength than what a lot of people.
Last week we covered, you know, Bruiser Brody and Lex Luger. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't realize that one of the earliest shoot fights that, you know, for the modern fans was John Tenta. John Tenta got into it with a big superstar in Japan that wasn't selling. And, you know, if you got a minute, just look that up. John Tenta, you know, wrestling shoot. And that guy was pretty good. That guy wasn't a punk. He wasn't a punk, man.
Also
he was
played
a tough guy.
Football in the SEC for LSU.
Did he really?
Yep.
I didn't know.
Never
that.
Held a major singles title, though, which is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Held the tag titles with Typhoon.
Mm-hmm. I hated, you know, and I liked him. I liked Tenta, but I hated his outfit, man. You know,
I liked it better than the shark.
You know, the problem is like the dude needed shorts, okay? And I'll say this because I'm a fat boy too. Like his just –
that Olympic just, style.
Yeah,
you know,
it did not singlet. Look good on him.
He had but, I can't remember what they call that. It's a butcher of some sort.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, he was definitely as much as I hate to say it because I was such a WCW fan, he was up there with WWF when him and Typhoon, they were the Natural Disasters. And
yeah, Natural Disasters.
When he became when he became Shark or whatever.
No, let's not even – we can't even talk about John Tenta and not bring up the fact that he killed Damien.
Yeah, snake burgers.
Yeah, he's a snake burger. You know?
Yeah.
It's like that guy will forever go, you know, go down as the guy that you know, that killed Damien and broke the hearts and, you know, broke the spirits of how many adolescent, you know, teenage boys, you know.
I remember WCW, one of the guys he was facing came out and shaved half of his head. And, you know, he didn't have any hair up top. He just had the long kind of like skullet. They shaved half of that off. And, dude, I remember for weeks he went with just half of his hair, you know, and like different pay-per-views. And it's like, you know, that guy goes home. You know, if he wants to go out and grab a bite to eat.
You know what they call that? They call that committee.
Yeah, yeah. Like
he was committed, boy.
Would you say he was, you know, we often talk about people who never – great, great wrestlers that never held a singles title. Would you put him on that list? Doesn't have to be the world title.
I was going to say, maybe like a mid-card level.
Yeah, he never even got an intercontinental title.
And you know why? You know why? For most of his career, he was on top. He didn't, you know, he really didn't need a belt, you know, to get himself over as that monster heel. You know, that's one thing that Vince, you know, that Vince had an eye for, man, those big guys that could work. And, you know, and Tenta is, you know, for as big as he was pretty agile, you know.
Hogan, you know, jumped ship to WCW, one of the first guys he could bring in was John Tenta, because he was a big guy and he could work.
That's right. But, you know, even to this day, I watch some of those, old, you know, like WWF challenges and WWF superstars, you know, back when he was squashing guys. And you know, like, I don't know how those guys took that finisher without getting hurt.
Man.
You know what I mean? Like, you know,
his finisher that kind of just proved, you know, how agile he is, you know, because I've said that forever. He had this dude. And it was one of, like, the superstar, whatever, you know, one of the little knockoffs. And it was just a squash match. And I bet this dude was smaller than Virgil. You know, I bet this dude didn't weigh 120 pounds. And he just, you know, flattens him. And kind of like Yoko, though. You know, you look at Yoko's finisher.
Yeah. But Yoko could still kind of land on his feet and cushion, you know. Like, you know, he could still work that. Where Tenta, it was like, you know, I bet you he was every bit of 350, 400 pounds. I mean, I don't know what they build him at, but, you know, they probably build him at 500 plus, but he was probably, you know, I, I can imagine. I can imagine somebody like you trying. I wouldn't let you do that to me. I wouldn't let you do it to me. No, not today.
Also, this week, the anniversary of the Benoit tragedy. Probably won't spend a whole lot of time talking about this, but certainly want to keep his son David and their friends and family in our thoughts. I'm sure it's pretty rough week for them this week, and I mean, they were left behind to live with this for the rest of their lives. So certainly tragedy.
Yeah,
and,
man.
So not to go back, but 468 pounds.
468
is what they build them at.
I'd say he's probably pretty close to that, if not ever.
Yeah,
I bet he was ever been at 400 pounds.
I tell you what, man, I getting back on the Benoit stuff, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time talking about it because, you know, I don't want to bring the mood down. But, you know, I was looking on TikTok, and after watching what the heck were we watching? Were we seeing his sister-in-law, Nancy's sister?
I just came across it.
Did you? Is that what it was? Well, his sister is on TikTok, and she was putting some of the personal, you know, their home videos and stuff. And man, it was.
Whew. I'm also on TikTok, OFC_Chapman.
OFC_Chapman.
I am not on TikTok, but.
I saw it today up at the shop. I was going through and, you know, here it is. Here's Chris, you know. Laughing, they're in like the dining room, and he's drinking dancing. A beer, and Nancy's actually recording, and it turns around, she's got a big old smile on her face, and
just a crazy sad thing.
Not to
stay with the doom and gloom, but have you guys seen the China documentary on Vice?
Not yet.
I will probably watch that. This evening.
Full transparency, I haven't seen it either, so I really don't have.
Bet it's probably gonna. It's gonna be, it's pretty, you know. Pretty.
Depressing. Of course, she passed away April 17th, 2016 at the age of 46 due to overdose. But I hear it's pretty depressing.
You know, on the upside, we did catch the part of the WWE Hidden Treasures where they were in search of the Black Butterfly robe.
The robe.
And
don't spoil it.
We haven't finished it yet. So I don't know if they as of this recording, we don't know if they finished it. We'll probably find out here in a few hours.
Well, I don't know. Or if they find it. The Nature Boy son-in-law tweeted a picture earlier today, so I don't want to spoil anything for you.
Oh, boy.
So you guys can figure out.
Why would – wow.
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 Yeah.
Thanks.
Good. We know he found it.
Yeah, we can edit this out, but dick move, man.
We'd mentioned earlier Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful. Paul Orndorff's son posted a video earlier this week. Doesn't appear to be in great health, guys. We talked about it a little bit off air, but, you know, people are asking him to take it down because, I mean, you can see behind me what a physical specimen Paul Orndorff was. And, you know, he wanted to be Mr. Wonderful for a reason. He really doesn't want to be remembered the way that video was portraying him to be. Really sad stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sad because I didn't know he was sick at all. And I was telling Steven, like, we watched something with him a while back or talked about him, and I kind of got online, and I was going to see if there was any way we could send him a message, try to get him on the show. But, you know, obviously, like I said, I had no idea he was in such bad shape.
Talk about people that never held a major singles title in WWF. He's got to be right up there, top 10 at least.
Yeah, you know, people like Paul Orndorff are perfect examples of you don't necessarily need the title to get yourself over. I mean, everybody hated him, you know, during that you know, rock and wrestling era, you know, and God, I mean, it's safe to say that, you know, that he was the number one, you know, number two heel. You know,
his career skyrocketed when he went to WCW and teamed with none other than Paul Roma.
Pretty Wonderful. Ooh. Held, I believe, the TV title in WCW and tag titles in WCW. Never.
Wait a second. They held the TV title.
Mr. Wonderful held the TV title.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But he was I think he held it as a tag team member, right?
No. I don't think so, but they did win the tag titles, I think, twice.
And that's pretty
I remember they beat Stars and Stripes for him once.
Thinking about him, he probably delivered one of the best pile drivers in the business.
Yeah. Yeah,
man, he used to have this elbow, man, and I remember
that sit down.
I remember watching back at a pay-per-view, and I think it was against Stars and Stripes, and Paul Roma goes, "Wind it up, you know, wind it up, Paul." And he starts doing this little juke jive dance, and then he drops that elbow, and oh man, it was just so good.
Yeah, you could tell that Paul spent a little time in the gym. That guy was, you know, when you looked that good back when they were running the territory or, you know, shooting TV, that guy just looked amazing. And kind of like with Rick Rude, you know, everybody, there wasn't a man on earth that didn't want to, you know, have that chiseled Paul Orndorff, you know, ravishing Rick Rude look, man. That guy looked like $1 million, but, you know, to see that video, man, that just tugged at my heart, you know.
You know, wouldn't
have been prayers. Yeah, prayers for him and his family, man. That is tough. Yeah.
We've talked several times about who would be a good alternate horseman. Hey, why not Paul Orndorff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes more sense than Paul Roma.
Well, you know, nothing makes more sense than Paul Roma. He should have been inducted in the Hall of Fame. But Paul Orndorff's problem, I think, was, you know, he was a bad son of a gun. You know, he wanted to be that top heel. You know, could him and Flair really have worked together? You know, because I think they were both battling for that top heel spot.
Yeah.
Didn't he kick the crap out of somebody backstage? Who was that? Look that Vader up, Jamie.
Was it Vader? I can tell you who it
Vader
was.
Yeah, it was.
That's what I was thinking.
Vader had an autograph signing that he was sent to from home office. And they already knew that he was going to be late to taping. So he did the shoot, came over. Paul's like, you know, where the heck have you been? Vader basically told him to, you know, eat sand. And old Paul, I think they had to pull Paul off of Vader because Paul was putting the fumble down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Paul wasn't. He was legit.
He's no pushover boy.
And this was after Paul had retired from in the ring. He already had his problem with his arm.
So he was basically like an agent.
Yeah, backstage. He was an agent backstage.
Wow.
They thought Vader, you know, according to Vader, the wires got crossed and nobody told him that he was going to be late. And you know, I think there was some sucker punching allegedly, and they're both passed, so I'm not going to go too far into that. But I remember them saying that somebody had to actually pull Paul off of Vader because he was just beating the crap. Wow, Vader says that he let him because, you know, he was already disabled and didn't
You know, I never had an opportunity to work with Vader, or I never met Vader, but I can tell you just based off of that. Now, Vader would have beat the crap out of
him. Because I'm going to tell you what, I'm a huge Vader fan, and like there was talks for years, man, that like when he'd have those little jobber matches, like he would just beat the piss out of them guys.
Make them
not want to come back.
So somebody you have
worked with. How bad do you want to be in this business?
Yeah. Somebody you have worked with was involved in an accident yesterday, Stephen. He hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Absolutely.
In a motor vehicle accident in Sturgis, South Dakota. Apparently was broadsided by a young lady that read a stop sign.
Oh,
hospital overnight.
Both are okay.
Both are okay. Both been released. I think he was on vacation with his lady friend, but
they actually posted a picture a couple hours ago. They were on the plane headed back home.
Oh,
okay. That was like their last day.
I tell you what, man, they don't get much tougher than Jim Duggan, boy. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, you know, I could see a damn Mack truck running a stoplight, you know, doing 60 miles an hour, and Jim Duggan getting out of the car going, "Hey, are you all right,
brother?" I can't tell you how many people. So there's a picture on my Facebook, and it's me and Jim, and we're both standing there with the thumbs up. And I can't tell you how many people have messaged me like, "Dude, that guy's hands." You know, because I mean, I don't have little hands, and dude, like it's twice the size of mine. Like, I would hate to make that dude mad and actually get punched in the face by him.
Yeah, you know, it you know, you got to ask, like, what's his ring size?
Yeah,
I bet you the guy's a solid 18 to 20.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm a big guy, and you know, just for kind of scale, I wear a size 13, and I would not be surprised if he doesn't wear 18, 19.
But you know what, man, when he was at that show, at that Legend show. Just the coolest dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Told stories in the back. Mm-hmm. And I remember, because I remember you were there, Sumo, because it's the time that, who was it? Not Sandman. Who's the other? Who, somebody stood
Sabu.
Us up. Sabu. Sabu no-showed us. And, but, you know, the people are still coming in. And Hacksaw didn't have to do anything, right? He could have sat back there, waited for his 5 minutes out there. But while people are coming in, you hear, oh, you know, from the back.
Which echoed through
which
the.
Which everybody that was coming in and outside, you know, oh. Yeah. You know, just a great, great guy.
He has that. He's always had that ability to just get himself.
He's an
over,
entertainer,
you know.
Man.
He 100% man, 100%.
You know what's funny? He's always, you know, Vince made him a little more cartoonish with the two before and the flag and the hoe, and before all that, when he was back in Bill Watts' days, he was a bad dude. I mean,
a bruiser, huh?
Yeah, he was booked totally different, but he's always going to remember or be remembered for the two before and the.
Yeah.
Lag and all that stuff.
Well, that dude's always going to be remembered for answering his phone at the right time and walking away. That's what that dude's going to be remembered for. But.
You know, I think of Duggan, man, like I you know, it's an honor to work with the guy, you know, he's super, super easy to work with and just a general, was able to just, you know, I can remember we went up to him, you know, just to go over what we were going to go over and you know, we're in the back and you know, I'm up next. Okay, well, here's what we're gonna do, and just, you know, just run through it. It was just the simplest thing, and that guy just literally from the moment his music hit, you know, I mean, just everybody, you know, there wasn't a person sitting. Everybody was up. You said you were there.
I don't remember it. Chapman says I was there.
Oh yeah, yeah. So I remember it was at the Burlsworth Center, at the Youth Center. And I remember JJ made an announcement that somebody didn't show. He didn't say who yet. And you were there and you actually texted me and said, let me guess, Sabu didn't show up. Yeah, Sabu didn't show.
Oh,
so, yep. Yeah. My little brother, shout out to him. He was there. That was one of his first shows.
First shows
that he went to with us. Yeah. Yep.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, great, great guy. I'm glad to know that, that you know, that he's all right and that they made it home and, you know, you know, get well soon if you're hurt, Jim. But you know, I know you're a tough guy, so
tough guy.
Yeah, you'll persevere.
Oh,
well, something Chapman's been chomping at the bit to talk about. Brock Anderson made his AEW debut at the age of 23 years old. What'd you guys think?
Go ahead. I'll let you before I bring it back up.
Well, I. You know, I think the kid needs a gear change. I think that the baby blues didn't necessarily, you know, necessarily fit, you know, fit him. You know, I think he's got a little bit of work to do, but I think he needs to pack on some muscle and size
I
up
thought
a little
what
bit.
He did out there was really good. He was his goal was to be the bump man for Cody, and that's what he did. He took all the big bumps and everything and. You know, how he took him, and we rewinded it. There was a part where he gets slung into the corner, and, you know, his timing's off with his feet and little stuff. You know, I think he'll be real good. He needs to tan, and he needs to put on some muscle.
Listen to Bischoff over here telling somebody he needs a tan.
Well, but, you know, here's the thing.
But you're right. He
fat looks better tan than it does white, brother.
Well, and he's got a skinny fat.
Yeah, he's got that softball body or that baseball body, you know, just, you know, dude can run a long way, but he probably drinks some beer, you know, while he's running.
He's only 23. He's going to put on some muscle. He's going to get a tan.
If he can get his shoulders up like what Arn was and the baby blues didn't work because he was too white.
I tell you what, you know, as you guys know, I'm a memorabilia guy. I love the memorabilia. You sent that picture to me. To us as a group, where it was Arn Anderson looking in the mirror and you know, Brock looking back. And I just thought that was the coolest promo picture that I'd seen in a very long time. I immediately, when I saw that shot, I thought, man, I'd like to get that double autographed, you know? So, you know, I'm not going to crap on the kid because I think the kid has got, you know, got some talent. And boy, you just, How can, if you're a fan of Arn Anderson or of WCW or the Four Horsemen, and you just, you've got to be rooting for that kid to.
Well, you noticed in that match, there was no high flying moves from him. There was no nothing. It was down home.
You mentioned a timing issue earlier. I saw one obvious timing issue, and it wasn't from Brock Anderson. It was from Cody Rhodes and Aaron Solo. Did you guys notice that?
No,
Cody got down on all fours, and then the guy, you know, there was a little bit of time there before he jumped on Cody's back. So,
I'll be honest with you. I don't know that I watched any of that other than Brock. You know, like, you know, that was my main focus. The trunks were too big. His underwear was hanging out half the time. You know, but
and we're nitpicking, by the way. Absolutely. You know, I mean, we're not. You know, we're just
the thing I love though, man, is that BA on his trunks, and it was in the same font as the old double A used to be.
Yep. Yeah. I thought that was cool. I thought he did.
And good. Dude, if he ever cuts his hair, he's going to look just like
him. He's going to look just like
him.
He's got that built up, but buddy, it's going away.
You're not hiding it, dude. We know what's on your
face. The horseshoe is in right.
Yeah. No, I thought for the short amount of time that he's been training and the kind of match that he was given, I thought he did really well. He's got a long way to go, but he's so young and so new that I think, you know, 10 years from now, you know, he's going to be a top guy and probably in WWE, you know, if they're still around.
I thought he did a lot better than some other guys that's on that roster. Yeah. He's been doing this for longer.
A lot longer, that's right.
Speaking of Cody, him and Brandi Rhodes welcomed their first child. Daughter Liberty Iris Reynolds was born on Friday, June 18th in Atlanta, weighing 6 pounds and 12 ounces. So congratulations to Cody and Brandi Rhodes.
Yeah, congratulations.
Ready to see Brandy back in action.
Yeah, right. You know, we were watching some AEW a couple of days ago, and Chapman pointed something out to me that it actually kind of bothers me now whenever I see it. And, you know, I didn't notice it before he mentioned it to me, but now that he's mentioned to me, I notice it every freaking time, and it drives me crazy. And I'm not even talking about being the only wrestler on the AEW roster that walks through the middle. You know, what the hell, why does Cody, when he, you know, makes his grand entrance, he's, you know, again, the only wrestler on the roster that goes down the middle. He comes down the middle and he does his little fire up. And then he looks over at
the legendary
Arn Anderson's like, all right, come on.
Waves him out. Come on, I'm done with mine. We can
showcase. You know, it's like.
Did you notice after that match how Brock and Arn kind of celebrated in the ring? Cody was up on the ramp, just kind of staring at him. I wonder if this is maybe some long term storytelling here.
I think I've said that from the get go.
It could be
he's going to turn on Cody, but him and Arn are going to turn on Odie, Brock and Arn. And they may break his arm or do something, you know, storyline-ish. But I think these two in the near future are going to have a hell of a feud.
You never know. Interesting, yeah. You never know.
Sticking with AEW, Tony Khan appeared on Pardon My Take and fired some shots at Vince Russo. And let me read this quote for you. He said, some of the things that went wrong for WCW were giving creative control to a lot of the wrestlers, and some of their storylines were asinine. Some of the ideas were great, but it was also a very disorganized show. And then when brought to somebody else from the WWF to be a writer, Vince Russo, he made it 10 times worse. He took a problem. They had a massive hangnail, and he just chopped off the arm. That was part of the problem. Then you add another major issue, which was the management. Most successful wrestling companies have had Supreme Commander at the top. He's owned it, booked it, run the place, run management, whether it's Vince McMahon organizing everything, Cowboy Bill Watts, Eddie Graham, Fritz Von Erich, countless others. That made sense as a business model, strong management. WCW didn't have that, and I could provide. I am a more organized booker than anyone WCW had, quote, end quote.
He's
not wrong.
That's what I was going to say. You know, the one thing that I have to say is that Tony's been doing this for about 2.5 years, you know, and I'm talking booking, mm-hmm. you know, being involved in the wrestling, you know, it's safe to say that he doesn't know everything that goes on backstage. Not saying that he's wrong, you know, not saying that he's wrong, but
there does need to be one general. But is Tony that guy when you've got Cody, both Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega, EVPs of your company? Who's all but Cody right now is holding all the gold.
Right, and right.
I've said from the start, once he started bringing all these people in, one of my concerns is there going to be too many cooks in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Now, here he's claiming to
be too many chiefs, not enough Indians.
But I wonder if he's really the only general. I don't know about that.
Right. Right. Yeah, you know, just those four people that you mentioned, you know, those guys, they, you know, look, man, the Bullet Club and Cody and all those guys have been, you know, they've been head turners for many, 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 many years before, you know, before they got with Tony. And Tony, of course, was basically the fourth member of the NWO. He was the money man, you know, and, you know, like, stick to what you know, and that's you know, supplying the guys who know what to do and how to run the wrestling company, because you've only been doing it for 2.5 years. You know, without those four guys that are running the company, you know, is AEW as successful? If Tony Khan's the only one running the place, I don't think so.
Well, there's no reason in the world why FTR doesn't have tag team titles.
Well, to the EVPs.
I know, but that's ridiculous. FTR is the best tag team in wrestling today.
I don't disagree with anything that he said. I think WCW did become a mess. I think Vince Russo probably made it worse. And I think there does need to be one person in charge. Say, nope, we're not going to do it that way. But I don't know if he's doing it that way right now. I think he needs to, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Fightful is reporting that Brock Lesnar and WWE have been in discussions recently regarding his potential return. You bring Brock Lesnar back, who do you put him with right away? Feud.
Gosh, you Roman. Know what?
That's who they'll put him with is Roman.
You gotta whoever you put him with is gonna have to carry this feud for the next year. Because you figure, you know, anytime Brock signs a contract, Brock's, you know, he doesn't sign your typical contract. He signs an appearance contract, and you know, he's guaranteed to appear on 12 shows a year, you know, including pay per views or whatever, you know, for millions of dollars or whatnot. You're gonna need somebody that's gonna be able to carry him, and you know, I don't know if Brock Lesnar as a face will have the same impact as he will as a heel. And I don't think that you can, you know, I don't think you can take the Roman Reigns head of the table gimmick, you know, as a face. So I don't think it'll be Roman, but gosh, who would it be?
Who's the other champion on Raw?
The Drew McIntyre? Is it?
No, Drew's
fine. Bobby Lashley.
Well,
so there's three things you could do. The person that beat him for the title before he left was Drew McIntyre. He could come avenge his loss. You've got the Roman Reigns thing's kind of writes itself with Paul Heyman. You know, he can start managing them both.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hey, you got to make a choice. And then there's, you know, there's that feud. And then you got Lashley, which if you're an MMA fan, you know, there's kind of a behind the scenes story there that you'd like to see.
Yeah.
The fight that we never got to see, the real fight we never got to see, we could actually see in WWE.
You know, let's hit the brakes for a second and touch on that. Hypothetically saying that Lashley Lesnar happened at UFC, because Lesnar would have never, Bellator wouldn't have had enough money to pay him to go down to Bellator. So who would have won that fight?
Lesnar.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too.
I'd say Brock.
Yeah, I you know, like they just, you know, they were both high caliber wrestlers. You know,
it depends. In the fight, since we're just throwing it out there, did Lashley have his headband to catch all of his sweat? Because that thing is power.
You know, we were talking about Jim Duggan earlier. Jim Duggan probably tells that same story to his friends and family about the time that he met up with Brock Lesnar. And he goes, we put our fists up like that, and his hand was 10 times bigger than mine. You know, it's like, Brock, I say Brock Lesnar within the first round or two would have
Brock an awesome collegiate wrestler. Lashley was an awesome wrestler in the Army. But when Brock made that jump to MMA, he went straight to the big fish in the he didn't want any cans. I mean, what is the second fight he beat Randy Couture for the world?
Well, you know, his first fight was against former world champion.
Well, it was against Heath.
Was his first fight not Frank Mir? Was that Heath Herring?
Heath Herring.
He lost. Yeah, Heath Herring was a decorated Texas Jiu-Jitsu, you know, fighter.
I thought it was Frank Mir because I remember he lost to Frank Mir with a leg lock.
Yeah, no, I remember the Heath Herring fight because, man, you'll always see that in the highlight film because Lesnar hit him with an overhand right that kind of, you know, had Herring like kind of, you know, roll backwards and Lesnar just steamrolled him. You know, you'll always remember that. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see Lashley. And I actually saw Lashley fight live up in St. Louis. And, you know, he's a big guy, but I don't think he could handle Brock, man. Brock's just too heavy, too brutal.
Somebody else coming back soon. Becky Lynch appears to be returning from her pregnancy leave.
Yeah,
she was at the Performance Center last week working out and supposedly backstage at Hell in a Cell. So, again, you bring her in. There's a couple possibilities. She technically didn't lose the title. So,
it's crazy when you think about it. Finn Balor, you know, put him out on the shelf for what, 6 months? Sting, you know, put Sting on the shelf for you know, 4 or 5 months. Becky Lynch, she's been gone for Seth Rollins is a dangerous worker.
Yeah.
Anybody that works with Seth Rollins is.
Speaking of Hell in a Cell, you guys think that's a bit watered down now? Has it lost its prestige?
Yeah.
You mean compared to when Mankind got thrown off the top? Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't like the obvious. You know, even when you go back and we covered that, you know, a few weeks ago, when Mankind got thrown off that cage, you know, you really didn't see the crash pads and you didn't see the safety precautions. They did a good job in hiding that. Nowadays, anytime somebody gets thrown off of something high, it's like they just really don't
care.
That
was easy,
you know.
When Vic got thrown off the top, there wasn't a crash pad. He landed
exactly
on a table.
Exactly.
Still, as vicious as Jericho getting thrown off that blood and guts.
Yeah. Well, then you've got Mick falling through because they had zip ties on there that broke. You know, his tooth through his nose.
They gave
I'd say it may be watered down just a hair.
Just a hair.
Especially when they had one at Saudi, which I think that was the kind of the downfall. The one that was a Seth Rollins and the Fiend, I think, at the Saudi Arabia event.
Mm-hmm.
They ended that in a no contest. I'm like, really?
It's a Hell in a Cell. How do you end a Hell in a Cell?
Well, that was their way around it. It wasn't a DQ. It was referee stoppage. That was their out. But still, to me, that's when it started going downhill. And then this past week, we had one on SmackDown for free, and then one this past Monday night on Raw for free.
Yeah, I'm like, well, that's over with. I read that the USA Network was actually kind of up in arms about that.
Well, I don't blame them. You give you gave Fox one for free. What are you going to do for us? You've been with us for 20 something years.
And look at us now. A week later, we're it's like, come on, USA, get with the program, man. Like let WWE write this. You know this stuff. Don't cram it in them and let them on
your TV.
Don't have
just
them
let them suck it up on their own.
Yep. Exactly, but yeah, you know, like I don't know. I big fan of the early Hell in Cells, the new ones. I really could care less. You know, they just don't mean anything anymore.
Yep, that's kind of like all the title changes, man. Yep. I mean, you can talk about Hogan, you know, defending it 4 times a year, or you know, you mentioned Brock earlier about how he only works so many dates here. He takes a lot of heat from the IWC, but
yeah.
You know what? I don't blame Brock Lesnar.
I you know,
that's how you
I've
keep
said
him
it. I have said it for many, many years. I'm not against the champion showing up, you know, once every couple of shows.
It, exactly,
you know.
Chapman. It makes it mm-hmm. special. It makes it more prestige.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, back when, who was it? Who was the champion? I can't remember who it was back, but I remember the episode of Raw. This was the episode that the Big Boss Man driving the limo with Paul White on the I can't remember who the champion was, but I couldn't believe, and this was back in the 90s, I couldn't believe that they were having a heavyweight title championship match like at the 8 o'clock hour. You know what I mean? Like what? That's, you know,
Austin and The Rock seemed to put up the belt a lot on Raw.
And that's when Mankind One was on a Raw. That's when
the channel started turning
thanks to Shivani. Yeah.
See, and to me, you know, like Mankind winning is one of the you know, one of the biggest, you know, the biggest championship wins ever, I think, because, you know, the crowd was just so invested into it. And you know, and of course, WCW, we got the Eric Bischoff got to spoil it for us. And I think that backfired on him a little bit.
So let me ask you all this.
I'm a fan of, you know, every once in a while.
So we know that Vince relies on bringing in old talent like Brock, bringing him back. You bring Austin just for the nostalgia pop and all this. So when Brock's done, who do they bring back? What legends do they bring back? Who do we have from now, or even from 10 years ago, that's going to come back?
That's one of the things. It's hard to make new stars right now when there's no crowd.
Yeah. I can't believe that. You know, I can't believe that they're still doing Raw, you know, in front of at the Thunderdome. I you know, AEW has at least got a small crowd. You know, you know, NXT, I think, is working in front of a small crowd too.
Very small crowd.
Yeah, they still have small crowd.
They still have the Thunderdome, but they've added maybe 100 people.
100 or so people into it. Yeah. It's going
to
be interesting.
We're getting closer to moving away from it. It was a good concept while it lasted, but I'm ready mm-hmm. for it to be over with.
Yeah. Well, if anything, it just shows how important the, you know, the crowd is. You know, I for one have always loved the Monday Night Raws after WrestleMania because, you know, I felt like the crowds were just such a, you know, that was the crowd kind of dictated the show. You know, the crowd dictated the show. They were so hot, and you know, man, I can't wait. You know, and we talk about this all the time. You know, like I couldn't imagine the pop that they would have received. You know, pulling up in that black Ford pickup, you know, going and making their AEW debut. You know, it's like you got guys like that, or even people like, you know, Drew McIntyre, who you know, last year when they did WrestleMania and he won his first WWE championship, you know, he did it at a tape show that he got to watch it, you know, watch it on television. You know, I kind of feel bad for those guys. And now that we've got the crowd back, hopefully, cross our fingers, hopefully we don't, you know, hopefully we can put all that Thunderdome stuff behind us and just have a good crowd. Yeah.
Well, before we get off here, I've also read where NXT is going to give the cruiserweights a little more attention, which I'm cool with that, and some WWE main event tapings. They brought up Bronson Reed, which is their North American champion, who defeated Drew Gulak, and Karrion Kross, which is their NXT world champion, defeated Shelton Benjamins. So maybe some call-ups soon. I don't know. But I'm afraid if that happens, we're going to see two very talented guys lose their...
Let me tell you, as long as they leave Cameron Grimes and LA Knight and Ted DiBiase on the gold and black brand, and that's all, man. As far as I'm concerned, we were talking about it earlier. As far as I'm concerned, that's the greatest angle in professional wrestling right now.
Yeah.
So the next big name they're going to call up is going to be Rick Steiner's boy. I've been reading a lot about him, and they've been praising him a lot.
Yep.
He looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been praising some of the folks down at the Performance Center. Hopefully, we'll get to see them in NXT first. But
yeah.
But I'll tell you, I enjoy the midweek wrestling. I say midweek because usually AEW's on Thursdays. It hasn't.
Still getting used to that Friday night time slot, are you?
Yeah, that's going to change in a few weeks. But I enjoy NXT and AEW better than just about anything right now. So.
Yeah.
Well, NXT is on its way to make it to the moon.
Man, I can't even tell you how much I am enjoying that
tell you,
Ted DiBiase, Cameron Grimes,
LA Knight. NXT is just missing about 2,000 people in the crowd.
Yeah.
But all they need.
Yeah.
It'd be awesome. Be a totally different atmosphere. If you've ever seen their takeovers when there was a live crowd, holy
crap. Oh, man. They were hot. Yeah, they were hot. They were super hot. I can't wait, you know, because it just, you know, those guys, you know, and hats off to people like, you know, like LA Knight, Cameron Grimes, like all these guys that have gone out and got themselves just over and over and over. I mean, like those guys, that feud is so over right now. And they did it without a crowd. Imagine how hot that crowd's going to be whenever they come back. You know, imagine the heat the LA Knight's going to get because he, you know, he blindsided Ted DiBiase, you know.
Which kind of sucks because, honestly, as close as we are to getting a crowd, I kind of wish they would have saved that for a crowd.
Well, you know? I think that, you know, we mentioned Becky Lynch and Brock Lesnar and even, you know, possibly John Cena. I think that's what they're waiting for is the crowd to bring those people back.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Well, that about wraps it up. Follow us on Facebook at The Slop Drop, on Twitter at The Slop Drop 1, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. Leave us a good rating, good review. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Either way, as always, thank you all for listening. Until next time, we are out of here.
Goodbye and good night.